everything around him. Harry seized his chance. Petrificus Totalus! The spell hit Dolohov before he could block it, and he toppled forward across his comrade, both of them rigid as boards and unable to move an inch. Hermione, Harry said at once, shaking her as the baby-headed Death Eater blundered out of sight again. Hermione, wake up!
What did he do to her?
Said Neville, crawling out from under the desk again to kneel at her other side, blood streaming from his rapidly swelling nose.
I don't know.
Neville groped for Hermione's wrist.
That's a pulse, Harry. I'm sure it is.
Such a powerful wave of relief swept through Harry that for a moment he felt light-headed.
She's alive? Yeah, I think so.
There was a pause in which Harry listened hard for the sounds of more footsteps, but all he could hear were the whimpers and blunderings of the baby Death Eater in the next room.
Neville, we're not far from the exit, Harry whispered. We're right next to that circular room. If we can just get you across it and find the right door before any more Death Eaters come, I'll bet you can get Hermione up the corridor and into the lift. Then you could find someone, raise the alarm.
And what are you going to do?
Said Neville, mopping his bleeding nose with his sleeve and frowning at Harry.
I've got to find the others, said Harry.
Well, I'm going to find them with you, said Neville firmly.
But Hermione...
We'll take her with us,
said Neville firmly.
I'll carry her. You're better at fighting than I am.
He stood up and seized one of Hermione's arms, glared at Harry, who hesitated, then grabbed the other and helped hoist Hermione's limp form over Neville's shoulders.
Wait,
said Harry, snatching up Hermione's wand from the floor and shoving it into Neville's hand.
You'd better take this.
Neville kicked aside the broken fragments of his own wand as they walked slowly toward the door.
My gran's gonna kill me,
said Neville thickly, blood spattering from his nose as he spoke.
That was my dad's old wand.
Harry stuck his head out of the door and looked around cautiously. The baby-headed Death Eater was screaming and banging into things, toppling grandfather clocks and overturning desks, bawling and confused. While the glass cabinet that Harry now suspected had contained time turners continued to fall, shatter, and repair itself on the wall behind them.
He's never going to notice us, he whispered. Come on, keep close behind me.
They crept out of the office and back toward the door into the black hallway, which now seemed completely deserted. They walked a few steps forward, Neville tottering slightly due to Hermione's weight. The door of the time room swung shut behind them, and the walls began to rotate once more. The recent blow on the back of Harry's head seemed to have unsteadied him. He narrowed his eyes, swaying slightly, until the walls stopped moving again. With a sinking heart, Harry saw that Hermione's fiery crosses had faded from the doors.
So which way do you reck?
But before they could make a decision as to which way to try, a door to their right sprang open, and three people fell out of it.
Ron!
Croaked Harry, dashing toward them.
Ginny! Are you all...
Harry!
Said Ron, giggling weakly, lurching forward, seizing the front of Harry's robes, and gazing at him with unfocused eyes.
There you are! Ha 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 ha! You look funny, Harry. You're all messed up.
Ron's face was very white, and something dark was trickling from the corner of his mouth. Next moment his knees had given way, but he still clutched the front of Harry's robes, so that Harry was pulled into a kind of bow.
Ginny?
Harry said fearfully.
What happened?
But Ginny shook her head and slid down the wall into a sitting position, panting and holding her ankle.
I think her ankle's broken. I heard something crack,
whispered Luna, who was bending over her and who alone seemed to be unhurt.
Four of them chased us into a dark room full of planets. It was a very odd place. Some of the time we were just floating in the dark.
Harry, we saw Uranus up close, said Ron, still giggling feebly. Get it, Harry? We saw Uranus. Ha ha ha.
A bubble of blood grew at the corner of Ron's mouth and burst.
Anyway, one of them grabbed Ginny's foot. I used the reductor curse and blew up Pluto in his face, but...
Luna gestured hopelessly at Ginny, who was breathing in a very shallow way, her eyes still closed. And what about Ron? Said Harry fearfully, as Ron continued to giggle, still hanging off the front of Harry's robes.
I don't know what they hit him with, said Luna sadly. But he's gone a bit funny. I could hardly get him along at all.
Harry, said Ron, pulling Harry's ear down to his mouth and still giggling weakly.
You know who this girl is, Harry. She's loony, loony Lovegood. Ha ha.
We've got to get out of here, said Harry firmly. Luna, can you help Ginny?
Yes,
said Luna, sticking her wand behind her ear for safekeeping, putting an arm around Ginny's waist and pulling her up.
It's only my ankle. I can do it myself,
said Ginny impatiently, but next moment she had collapsed sideways and grabbed Luna for support. Harry pulled Ron's arm over his shoulder just as, so many months ago, he had pulled Dudley's. He looked around. They had a 1 in 12 chance of getting the exit right the first time. He heaved Ron toward a door. They were within a few feet of it, when another door across the hall burst open and 3 Death Eaters sped into the hall, led by Bellatrix Lestrange.
There they are!
She shrieked. Stunning spells shot across the room. Harry smashed his way through the door ahead, flung Ron unceremoniously from him, and ducked back to help Neville in with Hermione. They were all over the threshold just in time to slam the door against Bellatrix.
Colloportus!
Shouted Harry, and he heard 3 bodies slam into the door on the other side.
It doesn't matter, said a man's voice. There are other ways in. We've got them. They're here.
Harry spun around. They were back in the brain room, and, sure enough, there were doors all around the walls. He could hear footsteps in the hall behind them as more Death Eaters came running to join the first.
Luna, Neville, help me!
The 3 of them tore around the room, sealing the doors as they went. Harry crashed into a table and rolled over the top of it in his haste to reach the next door.
Colloportus!
There were footsteps running along behind the doors. Every now and then another heavy body would launch itself against one, so it creaked and shuddered. Luna and Neville were bewitching the doors along the opposite wall. Then, as Harry reached the very top of the room, he heard Luna cry,
Colo! Ah!
He turned in time to see her flying through the air. 5 Death Eaters were surging into the room through the door she had not reached in time. Luna hit a desk, slid over its surface and onto the floor on the other side, where she lay sprawled, as still as Hermione.
Get Potter!
Shrieked Bellatrix, and she ran at him. He dodged her and sprinted back up the room. He was safe as long as they thought they might hit the prophecy.
Hey!
Said Ron, who had staggered to his feet and was now tottering drunkenly toward Harry, giggling.
Hey, Harry! There are brains in here! Isn't that weird, Harry?
Ron, get out of the way! Get down!
But Ron had already pointed his wand at the tank.
Honest, Harry, their brains, look. Acidobin.
The scene seemed momentarily frozen. Harry, Ginny and Neville and each of the Death Eaters turned, in spite of themselves, to watch the top of the tank as a brain burst from the green liquid like a leaping fish. For a moment it seemed suspended in midair, then it soared toward Ron, spinning as it came, and what looked like ribbons of moving images flew from it, unraveling like rolls of film.
Ha 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 ha, Harry, look at it,
said Ron, watching it disgorge its gaudy inners.
Harry, come and touch it, bet it's weird.
Ron, no!
Harry did not know what would happen if Ron touched the tentacles of thought, now flying behind the brain, but he was sure it would not be anything good. He darted forward, but Ron had already caught the brain in his outstretched hands. The moment they made contact with his skin, the tentacles began wrapping themselves around Ron's arms like ropes.
Harry, look what's happened. No. No. I don't like it. No. Stop. Stop.
But the thin ribbons were spinning around Ron's chest now. He tugged and tore at them as the brain was pulled tight against him like an octopus's body.
Defindo!
Yelled Harry, trying to sever the feelers wrapping themselves tightly around Ron before his eyes, but they would not break. Ron fell over, still thrashing against his bonds.
Harry, it'll suffocate him!
Screamed Ginny, immobilized by her broken ankle on the floor. Then a jet of red light flew from one of the Death Eaters' wands and hit her squarely in the face. She keeled over sideways and lay there unconscious.
Stupefy!
shouted Neville, wheeling around and waving Hermione's wand at the oncoming Death Eaters.
Stupefy! Stupefy!
But nothing happened. One of the Death Eaters shot their own stunning spell at Neville. It missed him by inches. Harry and Neville were now the only two left fighting the five Death Eaters, two of whom sent streams of silver light like arrows past them that left craters in the wall behind them. Harry ran for it as Bellatrix Lestrange sprinted right at him. Holding the prophecy high above his head, he sprinted back up the room. All he could think of doing was to draw the Death Eaters away from the others. It seemed to have worked. They streaked after him, knocking chairs and tables flying, but not daring to bewitch him in case they hurt the prophecy. And he dashed through the only door still open, the one through which the Death Eaters themselves had come. Inwardly praying that Neville would stay with Ron, find some way of releasing him, he ran a few feet into the new room and felt the floor vanish. He was falling down steep stone step after steep stone step, bouncing on every tier until at last, with a crash that knocked all the breath out of his body, he landed flat on his back in the sunken pit where the stone archway stood on its dais. The whole room was ringing with the Death Eaters' laughter. He looked up and saw the five who had been in the brain room descending toward him, while as many more emerged through other doorways and began leaping from bench to bench toward him. Harry got to his feet, though his legs were trembling so badly they barely supported him. The prophecy was still miraculously unbroken in his left hand, his wand clutched tightly in his right. He backed away, looking around, trying to keep all the Death Eaters within his sights. The back of his legs hit something solid. He had reached the dais where the archway stood. He climbed backward onto it. The Death Eaters all halted, gazing at him. Some were panting as hard as he was. One was bleeding badly. Dolohov, freed of the full body bind, was leering, his wand pointing straight at Harry's face. "Potter, your race is run," drawled Lucius Malfoy, pulling off his mask. "Now hand me the prophecy like a good boy." Let the others go, and I'll give it to you," said Harry desperately. A few of the Death Eaters laughed. "You are not in a position to bargain, Potter," said Lucius Malfoy, his pale face flushed with pleasure. "You see, there are 10 of us and only one of you. Or hasn't Dumbledore ever taught you how to count?"
"He's not alone,"
shouted a voice from above them.
"He's still got me."
Harry's heart sank. Neville was scrambling down the stone benches toward them, Hermione's wand held fast in his trembling hand.
"Neville, no! Go back to Ron!"
"Stupefy!"
Neville shouted again, pointing his wand at each Death Eater in turn.
"Stupefy! Stupor!"
One of the largest Death Eaters seized Neville from behind, pinioning his arms to his sides. He struggled and kicked. Several of the Death Eaters laughed.
"It's Longbottom, isn't it?" sneered Lucius Malfoy. "Well, your grandmother is used to losing family members to our cause. Your death will not come as a great shock."
"Longbottom!"
repeated Bellatrix, and a truly evil smile lit her gaunt face.
"Why, I have had the pleasure of meeting your parents, boy."
"I know you have,"
roared Neville, and he fought so hard against his captor's encircling grip that the Death Eater shouted,
"Someone stun him!"
"No, no, no,"
said Bellatrix. She looked transported, alive with excitement as she glanced at Harry, then back at Neville.
"No, let's see how long Longbottom lasts before he cracks like his parents. Unless Potter wants to give us the prophecy."
"Don't give it to them,"
roared Neville, who seemed beside himself, kicking and writhing as Bellatrix drew nearer to him and his captor, her wand raised.
"Don't give it to them, Harry."
Bellatrix raised her wand.
"Crucio!"
Neville screamed, his legs drawn up to his chest so that the Death Eater holding him was momentarily holding him off the ground. The Death Eater dropped him, and he fell to the floor, twitching and screaming in agony.
"That was just a taster,"
said Bellatrix, raising her wand so that Neville's scream stopped, and he lay sobbing at her feet. She turned and gazed up at Harry.
"Now, Potter, either give us the prophecy or watch your little friend die the hard way."
Harry did not have to think. There was no choice. The prophecy was hot with the heat from his clutching hand as he held it out. Malfoy jumped forward to take it. Then high above them, two more doors burst open and five more people sprinted into the room. Sirius, Lupin, Moody, Tonks, and Kingsley. Malfoy turned and raised his wand, but Tonks had already sent a stunning spell right at him. Harry did not wait to see whether it had made contact, but dived off the dais out of the way. The Death Eaters were completely distracted by the appearance of the members of the Order, who were now raining spells down upon them as they jumped from step to step toward the sunken floor. Through the darting bodies, the flashes of light, Harry could see Neville crawling along. He dodged another jet of red light and flung himself flat on the ground to reach Neville.
"Are you okay?"
he yelled, as another spell soared inches over their heads.
"Yes,"
said Neville, trying to pull himself up. "And Ron?"
"I think he's all right. He was still fighting the brain when I left."
The stone floor between them exploded as a spell hit it, leaving a crater right where Neville's hand had been seconds before. Both scrambled away from the spot. Then a thick arm came out of nowhere, seized Harry around the neck, and pulled him upright so that his toes were barely touching the floor.
"Give it to me,"
growled a voice in his ear.
"Give me the prophecy."
The man was pressing so tightly on Harry's windpipe that he could not breathe. Through watering eyes, he saw Sirius dueling with a Death Eater some 10 feet away. Kingsley was fighting two at once. Tonks, still halfway up the tiered seats, was firing spells down at Bellatrix. Nobody seemed to realize that Harry was dying. He turned his wand backward towards the man's side, but had no breath to utter an incantation, and the man's free hand was groping toward the hand in which Harry was grasping the prophecy.
Ah!
Neville had come lunging out of nowhere. Unable to articulate a spell, he had jabbed Hermione's wand hard into the eyehole of the Death Eater's mask. The man relinquished Harry at once with a howl of pain, and Harry whirled around to face him and gasped,
"Stupefy!"
The Death Eater keeled over backward, and his mask slipped off. It was McNair, Buckbeak's would-be killer, one of his eyes now swollen and bloodshot.
"Thanks,"
Harry said to Neville, pulling him aside as Sirius and his Death Eater lurched past, dueling so fiercely that their wands were blurs. Then Harry's foot made contact with something round and hard, and he slipped. For a moment he thought he had dropped the prophecy, then saw Moody's magic eyes spinning away across the floor. Its owner was lying on his side, bleeding from the head, and his attacker was now bearing down upon Harry and Neville. Dolohov, his long, pale face twisted with glee.
"Taranta Legra!"
he shouted, his wand pointing at Neville, whose legs went immediately into a kind of frenzied tap dance, unbalancing him and causing him to fall to the floor again.
"Now, Potter!"
He made the same slashing movement with his wand that he had used on Hermione, just as Harry yelled,
"Protego!"
Harry felt something streak across his face like a blunt knife, but the force of it knocked him sideways, and he fell over Neville's jerking legs. But the shield charm had stopped the worst of the spell. Dolohov raised his wand again.
"Asio Prof!"
Sirius hurtled out of nowhere, rammed Dolohov with his shoulder, and sent him flying out of the way. The prophecy had again flown to the tips of Harry's fingers, but he had managed to cling to it. Now Sirius and Dolohov were dueling, their wands flashing like swords, sparks flying from their wand tips. Dolohov drew back his wand to make the same slashing movement he had used on Harry and Hermione. Springing up, Harry yelled, "Petrificus Totalus!" Once again, Dolohov's arms and legs snapped together, and he keeled over backward, landing with a crash on his back.
"Nice one!"
shouted Sirius, forcing Harry's head down as a pair of stunning spells flew toward them.
"Now I want you to get out of..."
They both ducked again. A jet of green light had narrowly missed Sirius. Across the room, Harry saw Tonks fall from halfway up the stone steps, her limp form toppling from stone seat to stone seat, and Bellatrix, triumphant, running back toward the fray.
"Harry, take the prophecy! Grab Neville and run!"
Sirius yelled, dashing to meet Bellatrix. Harry did not see what happened next. Kingsley swayed across his field of vision, battling with the pockmarked Rookwood, now maskless. Another jet of green light flew over Harry's head as he launched himself toward Neville.
"Can you stand?"
he bellowed in Neville's ear as Neville's legs jerked and twitched uncontrollably.
"Put your arm around my neck."
Neville did so. Harry heaved. Neville's legs were still flying in every direction. They would not support him, and then, out of nowhere, a man lunged at them. Both fell backward. Neville's legs waving wildly like an overturned beetle's. Harry, with his left arm held up in the air, to try and save the small glass ball from being smashed.
"The prophecy! Give me the prophecy, Potter!"
snarled Lucius Malfoy's voice in his ear, and Harry felt the tip of Malfoy's wand pressing hard between his ribs.
"No! Get off me! Neville, catch it!"
Harry flung the prophecy across the floor. Neville spun himself around on his back and scooped the ball to his chest. Malfoy pointed the wand instead at Neville, but Harry jabbed his own wand back over his shoulder and yelled, "Impedimenta!" Malfoy was blasted off his back. As Harry scrambled up again, he looked around and saw Malfoy smash into the dais on which Sirius and Bellatrix were now dueling. Malfoy aimed his wand at Harry and Neville again, but before he could draw breath to strike, Lupin had jumped between them.
"Harry, round up the others and go!"
Harry seized Neville by the shoulder of his robes and lifted him bodily onto the first tier of stone steps. Neville's legs twitched and jerked and would not support his weight. Harry heaved again with all the strength he possessed, and they climbed another step. A spell hit the stone bench at Harry's heel. It crumbled away, and he fell back to the step below. Neville sank to the ground, his legs still jerking and thrashing, and thrust the prophecy into his pocket.
"Come on," said Harry desperately, hauling at Neville's robes. "Just try and push with your legs."
He gave another stupendous heave, and Neville's robes tore all along the left seam. The small spun glass ball dropped from his pocket, and before either of them could catch it, one of Neville's floundering feet kicked it. It flew some 10 feet to their right and smashed on the step beneath them. As both of them stared at the place where it had broken, appalled at what had happened, a pearly white figure with hugely magnified eyes rose into the air, unnoticed by any but them. Harry could see its mouth moving, but in all the crashes and screams and yells surrounding them, not one word of the prophecy could he hear. The figure stopped speaking and dissolved into nothingness.
"Harry, I'm sorry," cried Neville,
his face anguished as his legs continued to flounder.
"I'm so sorry, Harry. I didn't mean to."
"It doesn't matter," Harry shouted. "Just try and stand. Let's get out of..."
"Dumbledore,"
said Neville, his sweaty face suddenly transported, staring over Harry's shoulder.
"What?"
"Dumbledore!"
Harry turned to look where Neville was staring. Directly above them, framed in the doorway from the brain room, stood Albus Dumbledore, his wand aloft, his face white and furious. Harry felt a kind of electric charge surge through every particle of his body.
They were saved.
Dumbledore sped down the steps past Neville and Harry, who had no more thought of leaving. Dumbledore was already at the foot of the steps when the Death Eaters nearest realized he was there. There were yells. One of the Death Eaters ran for it, scrabbling like a monkey up the stone steps opposite. Dumbledore's spell pulled him back as easily and effortlessly as though he had hooked him with an invisible line. Only one couple was still battling, apparently unaware of the new arrival. Harry saw Sirius duck Bellatrix's jet of red light. He was laughing at her.
"Come on, you can do better than that,"
he yelled, his voice echoing around the cavernous room. The second jet of light hit him squarely on the chest. The laughter had not quite died from his face, but his eyes widened in shock. Harry released Neville, though he was unaware of doing so. He was jumping down the steps again, pulling out his wand as Dumbledore turned to the dais too. It seemed to take Sirius an age to fall. His body curved in a graceful arc as he sank backward through the ragged veil hanging from the arch. And Harry saw the look of mingled fear and surprise on his godfather's wasted, once handsome face as he fell through the ancient doorway and disappeared behind the veil, which fluttered for a moment as though in a high wind, and then fell back into place. Harry heard Bellatrix Lestrange's triumphant scream, but knew it meant nothing. Sirius had only just fallen through the archway. He would reappear from the other side any second. But Sirius did not reappear.
"Sirius!"
Harry yelled.
"Sirius!"
He had reached the floor, his breath coming in searing gasps. Sirius must be just behind the curtain. He, Harry, would pull him back out again. But as he reached the ground and sprinted towards the dais, Lupin grabbed Harry around the chest, holding him back.
"There's nothing you can do, Harry."
Get him! Save him! He's only just gone through!
It's too late, Harry.
We can still reach him!
Harry struggled hard and viciously, but Lupin would not let go.
There's nothing you can do, Harry. Nothing. He's gone.
Chapter 36. The only one he ever feared.
He hasn't gone, Harry yelled.
He did not believe it. He would not believe it. Still, he fought Lupin with every bit of strength he had. Lupin did not understand. People hid behind that curtain. He had heard them whispering the first time he had entered the room.
Sirius was hiding, simply lurking out of sight.
Sirius!
He bellowed.
Sirius!
He can't come back, Harry, said Lupin, his voice breaking as he struggled to contain Harry.
He can't come back, because he's
He is not dead, roared Harry. Sirius!
There was movement going on around them. Pointless bustling, the flashes of more spells. To Harry it was meaningless noise. The deflected curses flying past them did not matter. Nothing mattered except that Lupin stopped pretending that Sirius, who was standing feet from them behind that old curtain, was not going to emerge at any moment, shaking back his dark hair and eager to re-enter the battle. Lupin dragged Harry away from the dais, Harry still staring at the archway, angry at Sirius now for keeping him waiting. But some part of him realized, even as he fought to break free from Lupin, that Sirius had never kept him waiting before. Sirius had risked everything always to see Harry, to help him. If Sirius was not reappearing out of that archway when Harry was yelling for him as though his life depended on it, the only possible explanation was that he could not come back, that he really was. Dumbledore had most of the remaining Death Eaters grouped in the middle of the room, seemingly immobilized by invisible ropes. Mad-Eye Moody had crawled across the room to where Tonks lay and was attempting to revive her. Behind the dais there were still flashes of light, grunts and cries. Kingsley had run forward to continue Sirius's duel with Bellatrix.
Harry?
Neville had slid down the stone benches one by one to the place where Harry stood. Harry was no longer struggling against Lupin, who maintained a precautionary grip on his arm nevertheless.
Harry, I'm really sorry,
said Neville. His legs were still dancing uncontrollably.
Was that man, was Sirius Black, a friend of yours?
Harry nodded. Here, said Lupin quietly, and pointing his wand at Neville's legs, he said,
Finite.
The spell was lifted. Neville's legs fell back onto the floor and remained still. Lupin's face was pale.
Let's find the others. Where are they all, Neville?
Lupin turned away from the archway as he spoke. It sounded as though every word was causing him pain.
They're all back there,
said Neville.
A brain attacked Ron, but I think he's all right. And Hermione is unconscious, but we could feel a pulse.
There was a loud bang and a yell from behind the dais. Harry saw Kingsley, yelling in pain, hit the ground. Bellatrix Lestrange turned tail and ran as Dumbledore whipped around. He aimed a spell at her, but she deflected it. She was halfway up the steps now.
Harry, no!
Cried Lupin, but Harry had already ripped his arm from Lupin's slackened grip.
She killed Sirius! Bellowed Harry. She killed him! I'll kill her!
And he was off, scrambling up the stone benches. People were shouting behind him, but he did not care. The hem of Bellatrix's robes whipped out of sight ahead, and they were back in the room where the brains were swimming. She aimed a curse over her shoulder. The tank rose into the air and tipped. Harry was deluged in the foul-smelling potion within. The brains slipped and slid over him and began spinning their long-colored tentacles. But he shouted,
Wingardium Leviosa!
And they flew into the air away from him. Slipping and sliding, he ran on toward the door. He leapt over Luna, who was groaning on the floor, past Ginny, who said,
Harry, what?
Past Ron, who giggled feebly, and Hermione, who was still unconscious. He wrenched open the door into the circular black hall and saw Bellatrix disappearing through a door on the other side of the room. Beyond her was the corridor leading back to the lifts. He ran, but she had slammed the door behind her, and the walls had begun to rotate again. Once more he was surrounded by streaks of blue light from the whirling candelabra.
Where's the exit?
he shouted desperately as the wall rumbled to a halt again.
Where's the way out?
The room seemed to have been waiting for him to ask. The door right behind him flew open, and the corridor toward the lift stretched ahead of him, torch lit and empty. He ran. He could hear a lift clattering ahead of him. He sprinted up the passageway, swung around the corner, and slammed his fist onto the button to call a second lift. It jangled and banged lower and lower. The grills slid open, and Harry dashed inside, now hammering the button marked atrium. The doors slid shut, and he was rising. He forced his way out of the lift before the grills were fully open and looked around. Bellatrix was almost at the telephone lift at the other end of the hall. But she looked back as he sprinted toward her and aimed another spell at him. He dodged behind the fountain of magical brethren. The spell zoomed past him and hit the wrought gold gates at the other end of the atrium so that they rang like bells. There were no more footsteps. She had stopped running. He crouched behind the statues, listening.
Come out, little Harry,
she called in her mock baby voice, which echoed off the polished wooden floors.
What did you come after me for, then? I thought you were here to avenge my dear cousin.
I am, shouted Harry, and a score of ghostly Harrys seemed to chorus, I am, I am, I am, all around the room.
Ah, did you love him, little baby Potter?
Hatred rose in Harry such as he had never known before. He flung himself out from behind the fountain and bellowed, Crucio! Bellatrix screamed. The spell had knocked her off her feet, but she did not writhe and shriek with pain as Neville had. She was already on her feet again, breathless, no longer laughing. Harry dodged behind the golden fountain again. Her counterspell hit the head of the handsome wizard, which was blown off and landed 20 feet away, gouging long scratches into the wooden floor.
Never used an unforgivable curse before, have you, boy?
She yelled. She had abandoned her baby voice now.
You need to mean them, Potter. You need to really want to cause pain, to enjoy it. Righteous anger won't hurt me for long. I'll show you how it is done, shall I? I'll give you a lesson.
Harry had been edging around the fountain on the other side. She screamed,
Crucio!
And he was forced to duck down again as the centaur's arm, holding its bow, spun off and landed with a crash on the floor a short distance from the golden wizard's head.
Potter, you cannot win against me,
she cried. He could hear her moving to the right, trying to get a clear shot of him. He backed around the statue away from her, crouching behind the centaur's legs, his head level with the house elf's.
I was and am the Dark Lord's most loyal servant. I learnt the dark arts from him, and I know spells of such power that you, pathetic little boy, can never hope to compete.
Stupefy, yelled Harry. He had edged right around to where the goblin stood beaming up at the now headless wizard and taken aim at her back as she peered around the fountain for him. She reacted so fast he barely had time to duck.
Protego!
The jet of red light, his own stunning spell, bounced back at him. Harry scrambled back behind the fountain, and one of the goblin's ears went flying across the room.
Potter! I am going to give you one chance!
Shouted Bellatrix.
Give me the prophecy! Roll it out toward me now, and I may spare your life.
Well, you're gonna have to kill me, because it's gone, Harry roared. And as he shouted it, pain seared across his forehead. His scar was on fire again, and he felt a surge of fury that was quite unconnected with his own rage.
And he knows, said Harry with a mad laugh to match Bellatrix's own. Your dear old mate Voldemort knows it's gone. He's not gonna be happy with you, is he?
What? What do you mean?
She cried, and for the first time there was fear in her voice.
The prophecy smashed when I was trying to get Neville up the steps. What do you think Voldemort will say about that, then?
His scar seared and burned. The pain of it was making his eyes stream.
Liar!
She shrieked, but he could hear the terror behind the anger now.
You've got it, Potter, and you will give it to me. Hasio prophecy! Hasio prophecy!
Harry laughed again because he knew it would incense her, the pain building in his head so badly he thought his skull might burst. He waved his empty hand from behind the one-eared goblin and withdrew it quickly as she sent another jet of green light flying at him.
Nothing there, he shouted. Nothing to summon. It smashed and nobody heard what it said. Tell your boss that...
No!
She screamed.
It isn't true! You're lying! Master, I tried! Do not punish me!
Don't waste your breath! Yelled Harry, his eyes screwed up against the pain in his scar, now more terrible than ever. He can't hear you from here!
Can't I, Potter?
Said a high, cold voice. Harry opened his eyes, tall, thin and black hooded, his terrible snake-like face white and gaunt, his scarlet, slit-pupiled eyes staring. Lord Voldemort had appeared in the middle of the hall, his wand pointing at Harry, who stood frozen, quite unable to move.
So you smashed my prophecy,
said Voldemort softly, staring at Harry with those pitiless red eyes.
No, Bella, he is not lying. I see the truth looking at me from within his worthless mind. Months of preparation, months of effort, and my Death Eaters have let Harry Potter thwart me again. Master, I am sorry. I knew not. I was fighting the Animagus Black,
sobbed Bellatrix, flinging herself down at Voldemort's feet as he paced slowly nearer.
Master, you should know. Be quiet, Bella,
said Voldemort dangerously.
I shall deal with you in a moment. Do you think I have entered the Ministry of Magic to hear your sniveling apologies? But, Master, he is here. He is below.
Voldemort paid no attention.
I have nothing more to say to you, Potter,
he said quietly.
You have irked me too often, for too long. Avada Kedavra!
Harry had not even opened his mouth to resist. His mind was blank, his wand pointing uselessly at the floor. But the headless golden statue of the wizard in the fountain had sprung alive, leaping from its plinth and landed on the floor with a crash between Harry and Voldemort. The spell merely glanced off its chest as the statue flung out its arms, protecting Harry.
What?
Said Voldemort, staring around, and then he breathed.
Dumbledore.
Harry looked behind him, his heart pounding. Dumbledore was standing in front of the golden gates. Voldemort raised his wand and sent another jet of green light at Dumbledore, who turned and was gone in a whirling of his cloak. Next second he had reappeared behind Voldemort and waved his wand toward the remnants of the fountain. The other statues sprang to life, too. The statue of the witch ran at Bellatrix, who screamed and sent spells streaming uselessly off its chest before it dived at her, pinning her to the floor. Meanwhile, the goblin and the house elf scuttled toward the fireplaces set along the wall, and the one-armed centaur galloped at Voldemort, who vanished and reappeared beside the pool. The headless statue thrust Harry backward, away from the fight, as Dumbledore advanced on Voldemort, and the golden centaur cantered around them both.
It was foolish to come here tonight, Tom, said Dumbledore calmly. The Aurors are on their way. By which time I shall be gone, and you dead,
spat Voldemort. He sent another killing curse at Dumbledore but missed, instead hitting the security guard's desk, which burst into flame. Dumbledore flicked his own wand. The force of the spell that emanated from it was such that Harry, though shielded by his stone guard, felt his hair stand on end as it passed, and this time Voldemort was forced to conjure a shining silver shield out of thin air to deflect it. The spell, whatever it was, caused no visible damage to the shield, though a deep, gong-like note reverberated from it, an oddly chilling sound.
You do not seek to kill me, Dumbledore,
called Voldemort, his scarlet eyes narrowed over the top of the shield.
Above such brutality, are you? We both know that there are other ways of destroying a man, Tom,
Dumbledore said calmly, continuing to walk toward Voldemort as though he had not a fear in the world, as though nothing had happened to interrupt his stroll up the hall.
Merely taking your life would not satisfy me, I admit. There is nothing worse than death, Dumbledore,
snarled Voldemort.
You are quite wrong,
said Dumbledore, still closing in upon Voldemort and speaking as lightly as though they were discussing the matter over drinks. Harry felt scared to see him walking along, undefended, shieldless. He wanted to cry out a warning, but his headless guard kept shunting him backward toward the wall, blocking his every attempt to get out from behind it.
Indeed, your failure to understand that there are things much worse than death has always been your greatest weakness.
Another jet of green light flew from behind the silver shield. This time it was the one-armed centaur galloping in front of Dumbledore that took the blast and shattered into 100 pieces. But before the fragments had even hit the floor, Dumbledore had drawn back his wand and waved it as though brandishing a whip. A long, thin flame flew from the tip. It wrapped itself around Voldemort, shield and all. For a moment, it seemed Dumbledore had won. But then the fiery rope became a serpent, which relinquished its hold upon Voldemort at once and turned, hissing furiously, to face Dumbledore. Voldemort vanished. The snake reared from the floor, ready to strike. There was a burst of flame in midair above Dumbledore, just as Voldemort reappeared, standing on the plinth in the middle of the pool where so recently the 5 statues had stood.
"Look out!" Harry yelled.
But even as he shouted, one more jet of green light had flown at Dumbledore from Voldemort's wand, and the snake had struck. Fawkes swooped down in front of Dumbledore, opened his beak wide, and swallowed the jet of green light whole. He burst into flame and fell to the floor, small, wrinkled, and flightless. At the same moment, Dumbledore brandished his wand in one long, fluid movement. The snake, which had been an instant from sinking its fangs into him, flew high into the air and vanished in a wisp of dark smoke. The water in the pool rose up and covered Voldemort, like a cocoon of molten glass. For a few seconds, Voldemort was visible only as a dark, rippling, faceless figure, shimmering and indistinct upon the plinth, clearly struggling to throw off the suffocating mass. Then he was gone, and the water fell with a crash back into its pool, slopping wildly over the sides, drenching the polished floor.
"Master!"
screamed Bellatrix. Sure it was over, sure Voldemort had decided to flee. Harry made to run out from behind his statue guard, but Dumbledore bellowed,
"Stay where you are, Harry!"
For the first time, Dumbledore sounded frightened. Harry could not see why. The hall was quite empty but for themselves, the sobbing Bellatrix still trapped under her statue, and the tiny baby Fawkes croaking feebly on the floor. And then Harry's scar burst open. He knew he was dead. It was pain beyond imagining, pain past endurance. He was gone from the hall. He was locked in the coils of a creature with red eyes, so tightly bound that Harry did not know where his body ended and the creature's began. They were fused together, bound by pain, and there was no escape. And when the creature spoke, it used Harry's mouth so that in his agony he felt his jaw move.
"Kill me now, Dumbledore."
Blinded and dying, every part of him screaming for release, Harry felt the creature use him again.
"If death is nothing, Dumbledore, kill the boy."
"Let the pain stop," thought Harry. "Let him kill us. End it, Dumbledore. Death is nothing compared to this. And I'll see Sirius again."
And as Harry's heart filled with emotion, the creature's coils loosened. The pain was gone. Harry was lying face down on the floor, his glasses gone, shivering as though he lay upon ice, not wood. And there were voices echoing through the hall, more voices than there should have been. Harry opened his eyes, saw his glasses lying at the heel of the headless statue that had been guarding him, but which now lay flat on its back, cracked and immobile. He put them on and raised his head an inch, to find Dumbledore's crooked nose inches from his own.
"Are you all right, Harry?"
"Yes," said Harry, shaking so violently he could not hold his head up properly.
"Yeah, I'm... Where's Voldemort? Where... Who are all these? What's..."
The atrium was full of people. The floor was reflecting emerald green flames that had burst into life in all the fireplaces along one wall, and a stream of witches and wizards was emerging from them. As Dumbledore pulled him back to his feet, Harry saw the tiny gold statues of the house elf and the goblin leading a stunned-looking Cornelius Fudge forward.
"He was there!"
shouted a scarlet-robed man with a ponytail, who was pointing at a pile of golden rubble on the other side of the hall, where Bellatrix had lain trapped moments before.
"I saw him, Mr. Fudge, I swear. It was you-know-who. He grabbed a woman and disapparated."
I know, Williamson, I know. I saw him too.
Gibbered Fudge, who was wearing pajamas under his pinstripe cloak and was gasping as though he had just run miles.
Merlin's beard. Here, here, in the Ministry of Magic. Great heavens above. It doesn't seem possible. My word, how can this be?
If you proceed downstairs into the Department of Mysteries, Cornelius,
said Dumbledore, apparently satisfied that Harry was all right, and walking forward so that the newcomers realized he was there for the first time. A few of them raised their wands, others simply looked amazed. The statues of the elf and goblin applauded, and Fudge jumped so much that his slipper-clad feet left the floor.
You will find several escaped Death Eaters contained in the Death Chamber, bound by an anti-disapparition jinx, and awaiting your decision as to what to do with them.
Dumbledore!
Gasped Fudge, apparently beside himself with amazement.
You? Here? I...
He looked wildly around at the aurors he had brought with him, and it could not have been clearer that he was in half a mind to cry, seize him.
Cornelius, I am ready to fight your men and win again, said Dumbledore in a thunderous voice. But a few minutes ago you saw proof with your own eyes that I have been telling you the truth for a year. Lord Voldemort has returned. You have been chasing the wrong men for 12 months, and it is time you listened to sense.
I don't... Well...
blustered Fudge, looking around as though hoping somebody was going to tell him what to do. When nobody did, he said,
Very well. Dawlish, Williamson, go down to the Department of Mysteries and see... Dumbledore, you will need to tell me exactly the Fountain of Magical Brethren. What happened?
He added in a kind of whimper, staring around at the floor, where the remains of the statues of the witch, wizard, and centaur now lay scattered.
We can discuss that after I have sent Harry back to Hogwarts, said Dumbledore.
Harry? Harry Potter?
Fudge wheeled around and stared at Harry, who was still standing against the wall beside the fallen statue that had been guarding him during Dumbledore and Voldemort's duel.
He... here?
Said Fudge, goggling at Harry.
Why? What's all this about?
I shall explain everything, repeated Dumbledore, when Harry is back at school.
He walked away from the pool to the place where the golden wizard's head lay on the floor. He pointed his wand at it and muttered,
Portus!
The head glowed blue and trembled noisily against the wooden floor for a few seconds, then became still once more.
Now see here, Dumbledore,
said Fudge, as Dumbledore picked up the head and walked back to Harry carrying it.
You haven't got authorization for that portkey. You can't do things like that right in front of the Minister of Magic. You...
His voice faltered as Dumbledore surveyed him magisterially over his half-moon spectacles.
You will give the order to remove Dolores Umbridge from Hogwarts, said Dumbledore. You will tell your aurors to stop searching for my Care of Magical Creatures teacher, so that he can return to work. I will give you...
Dumbledore pulled a watch with 12 hands from his pocket and surveyed it.
30 minutes of my time tonight, in which I think we shall be more than able to cover the important points of what has happened here. After that, I shall need to return to my school. If you need more help from me, you are, of course, more than welcome to contact me at Hogwarts. Letters addressed to the headmaster will find me.
Fudge goggled worse than ever. His mouth was open and his round face grew pinker under his rumpled grey hair.
You...
Dumbledore turned his back on him.
Take this portkey, Harry.
He held out the golden head of the statue, and Harry placed his hand upon it, past caring what he did next or where he went.
I shall see you in 30 minutes,
said Dumbledore quietly.
1, 2, 3.
Harry felt the familiar sensation of a hook being jerked behind his navel. The polished wooden floor was gone from beneath his feet. The atrium, Fudge, and Dumbledore had all disappeared, and he was flying forward in a whirlwind of color and sound. Chapter 37 The Lost Prophecy. Harry's feet hit solid ground again. His knees buckled a little, and the golden wizard's head fell with a resounding clunk to the floor. He looked around and saw that he had arrived in Dumbledore's office. Everything seemed to have repaired itself during the headmaster's absence. The delicate silver instruments stood again upon the spindle-legged tables, puffing and whirring serenely. The portraits of the headmasters and headmistresses were snoozing in their frames, heads lolling back in armchairs or against the edge of their pictures. Harry looked through the window. There was a cool line of pale green along the horizon. Dawn was approaching. The silence and the stillness, broken only by the occasional grunt or snuffle of a sleeping portrait, was unbearable to him. If his surroundings could have reflected the feelings inside him, the pictures would have been screaming in pain. He walked around the quiet, beautiful office, breathing quickly, trying not to think. But he had to think. There was no escape. It was his fault Sirius had died. It was all his fault. If he, Harry, had not been stupid enough to fall for Voldemort's trick, if he had not been so convinced that what he had seen in his dream was real, if he had only opened his mind to the possibility that Voldemort was, as Hermione had said, banking on Harry's love of playing the hero. It was unbearable. He would not think about it. He could not stand it. There was a terrible hollow inside him he did not want to feel or examine. A dark hole where Sirius had been, where Sirius had vanished. He did not want to have to be alone with that great silent space. He could not stand it. A picture behind him gave a particularly loud grunting snore, and a cool voice said,
"Ah, Harry Potter."
Phineas Nigellus gave a long yawn, stretching his arms as he surveyed Harry out of shrewd, narrow eyes.
"And what brings you here in the early hours of the morning?" said Phineas. "This office is supposed to be barred to all but the rightful headmaster. Or has Dumbledore sent you here? Oh, don't tell me."
He gave another shuddering yawn.
"Another message for my worthless great-great-grandson?"
Harry could not speak. Phineas Nigellus did not know that Sirius was dead, but Harry could not tell him. To say it aloud would be to make it final, absolute, irretrievable. A few more of the portraits had stirred now. Terror of being interrogated made Harry stride across the room and seize the doorknob. It would not turn. He was shut in.
"I hope this means,"
said the corpulent red-nosed wizard, who hung on the wall behind Dumbledore's desk,
"that Dumbledore will soon be back with us."
Harry turned. The wizard was surveying him with great interest. Harry nodded. He tugged again on the doorknob behind his back, but it remained immovable.
"Oh, good,"
said the wizard.
"It has been very dull without him, very dull indeed."
He settled himself on the throne-like chair on which he had been painted and smiled benignly upon Harry.
"Dumbledore thinks very highly of you, as I am sure you know,"
he said comfortably.
"Oh, yes, hold you in great esteem."
The guilt filling the whole of Harry's chest like some monstrous, weighty parasite now writhed and squirmed. Harry could not stand this. He could not stand being Harry anymore. He had never felt more trapped inside his own head and body, never wished so intensely that he could be somebody, anybody else. The empty fireplace burst into emerald green flame, making Harry leap away from the door, staring at the man spinning inside the grate. As Dumbledore's tall form unfolded itself from the fire, the wizards and witches on the surrounding walls jerked awake. Many of them gave cries of welcome.
"Thank you," said Dumbledore softly.
He did not look at Harry at first, but walked over to the perch beside the door and withdrew from an inside pocket of his robes the tiny, ugly, featherless forks, whom he placed gently on the tray of soft ashes beneath the golden post where the full-grown forks usually stood.
"Well, Harry," said Dumbledore, finally turning away from the baby bird, "you will be pleased to hear that none of your fellow students are going to suffer lasting damage from the night's events."
Harry tried to say good, but no sound came out. It seemed to him that Dumbledore was reminding him of the amount of damage he had caused by his actions tonight. And although Dumbledore was for once looking at him directly, and though his expression was kindly rather than accusatory, Harry could not bear to meet his eyes.
"Madame Pomfrey is patching everybody up now," said Dumbledore.
Nymphadora Tonks may need to spend a little time in St. Mungo's, but it seems that she will make a full recovery.
Harry contented himself with nodding at the carpet, which was growing lighter as the sky outside grew paler. He was sure that all the portraits around the room were listening closely to every word Dumbledore spoke, wondering where Dumbledore and Harry had been and why there had been injuries.
"I know how you are feeling, Harry," said Dumbledore very quietly.
"No, you don't,"
said Harry, and his voice was suddenly loud and strong. White-hot anger leapt inside him. Dumbledore knew nothing about his feelings.
"You see, Dumbledore,"
said Phineas Nigellus slyly.
"Never try to understand the students. They hate it. They would much rather be tragically misunderstood, wallow in self-pity, stew in their own..."
"That's enough, Phineas," said Dumbledore.
Harry turned his back on Dumbledore and stared determinedly out of the opposite window. He could see the Quidditch stadium in the distance. Sirius had appeared there once, disguised as the shaggy black dog, so he could watch Harry play. He had probably come to see whether Harry was as good as James had been. Harry had never asked him.
"There is no shame in what you are feeling, Harry," said Dumbledore's voice. "On the contrary, the fact that you can feel pain like this is your greatest strength."
Harry felt the white-hot anger lick his insides, blazing in the terrible emptiness, filling him with a desire to hurt Dumbledore for his calmness and his empty words.
"My greatest strength, is it?"
said Harry, his voice shaking as he stared out at the Quidditch stadium, no longer seeing it.
"You haven't got a clue. You don't know..."
"What don't I know?" asked Dumbledore calmly.
It was too much. Harry turned around, shaking with rage.
"I don't want to talk about how I feel, all right?"
"Harry, suffering like this proves you are still a man. This pain is part of being human."
"Then I don't want to be human!"
Harry roared, and he seized one of the delicate silver instruments from the spindle-legged table beside him and flung it across the room. It shattered into 100 tiny pieces against the wall. Several of the pictures let out yells of anger and fright, and the portrait of Armando Dippet said,
"Really? I don't care!"
Harry yelled at them, snatching up a lunoscope and throwing it into the fireplace.
"I've had enough. I've seen enough. I want out. I want it to end. I don't care anymore."
He seized the table on which the silver instrument had stood and threw that too. It broke apart on the floor and the legs rolled in different directions.
"You do care," said Dumbledore.
He had not flinched or made a single move to stop Harry demolishing his office. His expression was calm, almost detached.
"You care so much you feel as though you will bleed to death with the pain of it."
"I don't!"
Harry screamed, so loudly that he felt his throat might tear. And for a second he wanted to rush at Dumbledore and break him too, shatter that calm old face, shake him, hurt him, make him feel some tiny part of the horror inside Harry.
"Oh, yes, you do," said Dumbledore, still more calmly. "You have now lost your mother, your father, and the closest thing to a parent you have ever known. Of course you care."
"You don't know how I feel,"
Harry roared.
"You, standing there, you..."
But words were no longer enough. Smashing things was no more help. He wanted to run. He wanted to keep running and never look back. He wanted to be somewhere he could not see the clear blue eyes staring at him, that hatefully calm old face. He turned on his heel and ran to the door, seized the doorknob again, and wrenched at it. But the door would not open. Harry turned back to Dumbledore.
"Let me out,"
he said. He was shaking from head to foot.
"No,"
said Dumbledore simply. For a few seconds they stared at each other.
"Let me out,"
Harry said again.
"No,"
Dumbledore repeated.
"If you don't, if you keep me in here, if you don't let me..."
"By all means continue destroying my possessions," said Dumbledore serenely. "I dare say I have too many."
He walked around his desk and sat down behind it, watching Harry.
"Let me out,"
Harry said yet again, in a voice that was cold and almost as calm as Dumbledore's.
"Not until I have had my say," said Dumbledore.
Do you think I give a... "I don't care what you've got to say,"
Harry roared.
"I don't want to hear anything you've got to say."
"You will,"
said Dumbledore sadly.
because you are not nearly as angry with me as you ought to be. If you are to attack me, as I know you are close to doing, I would like to have thoroughly earned it.
What are you talking?
It is my fault that Sirius died,
said Dumbledore clearly.
Oh, I should say almost entirely my fault. I will not be so arrogant as to claim responsibility for the whole. Sirius was a